This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 31st of July 2015 on Monocle 24. Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Gillian DeBias. Today, I'm joined by film critic Anna Smith to discuss what's on offer at the cinema this weekend. Up for discussion, we have new documentary Iris, a biographical film about American fashion icon Iris Apfel. Disney Pixar's latest release that looks at the inner workings of a child's brain inside out. And we'll end with Tom Cruise up to his usual precarious tricks in Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, the fifth film in the franchise. That's all to come here on The Arts Review on Monocle 24. And a very warm welcome to the show, Anna. Let's begin with Iris, the documentary about the wonderfully eccentric 93-year-old fashion icon Iris Apfel. Now, firstly, Anna, for those who are not familiar with Iris, can you colour in her character for us?
They call her a fashion icon for good reason. I mean, she's had a finger in lots of pies, you know, museums, art projects, fashion magazines, fashion design. But, you know, she's more than anything just a personality. She's one of those very strong-minded New York women who speaks her mind. She has a crazy eccentric style. You might recognise her just from sort of the covers of magazines. I mean, she's 93. She's probably the oldest woman to have been on the cover of many a style mag and still going strong. She's got very bold prints, very bold style, short hair and then great crazy round rimmed glasses. But this documentary is just terrific because, as you say, she's eccentric. She's got so much personality. And it's like spending time with a wonderful old granny who just has lots of great stories. It's good fun.
Now, before we go on a little bit more about her life, I wonder if you can tell us about the documentary filmmaker who made this portrait.
Yes, well, unfortunately, he passed away after making the film, but he's Albert Mysalis, who actually did Gimme Shelter with the Rolling Stones, so an iconic documentary maker. And also has quite a friendship, as you can see, as it goes through the film with Iris, and they have a little bit of banter. So, you know, he's obviously very experienced and well thought of, and he's got just that touch which brings out the personality in people quite quietly in a non-showy fashion. But yeah, he's done a tremendous job on this.
And he's one of these incredible filmmakers who also shoot their own material. So in that way, he gets so close to his subjects, which has a great impact when you see it
exactly.
All put together.
Exactly. There's a very intimate feel to it. And you do sense that it's really just one man and a camera, even though, of course, it's bound to be more than that. But it does have that intimacy and that closeness. And you do feel like, yeah, you're spending some time with this lady.
Well, to give us a little sense of this lady, we're going to hear a clip now. This is photographers, designers and other people in her life talking about her very unique appeal.
The fact that she combines everything, what is nice, what is ugly, what's cheap, what is chic. So all these things, and she just mixes that and she makes her own style of that. And that's really, that's inspiration for me.
Her things are so special. Everything Mrs. Apfel have is gorgeous.
When I first met her, there were all kinds of people, all ages, all walks of life, all surrounding her. She was so engaging to everybody, you know? And I could feel the pulse of her life, of her excitement about living.
A clip from Iris. Now, she was larger than life. She was colourful. But the film isn't voyeuristic. It doesn't parody her, does it?
Not at all. It's a very affectionate tribute, you know. I mean, it's larger than life is a good way of saying it. And she had so much, she has such excitement for life. Mm. It's infectious. So it's more than just a documentary about fashion or about style. It's about someone that's found what they love in life, even if it's buying a gaudy little cheap bracelet in a corner store. You know, she says she'd rather do that than go for an expensive meal with her husband. And you just think how wonderful, you know, she's worked for the White House, but you know, these little things still give her great, great pleasure.
People love films about fashion. And whether it's the September issue, whether it's documentaries on Diana Vreeland, how does this film stack up in terms of a fashion film?
I think it's more about style than fashion. It doesn't really give you as much insight into the industry in some of the ones you mentioned. One I'd compare it to is Advanced Style last year. I don't know if you saw that. That was a terrific film about elderly women who were just tremendous, you know, eye for style and lots of personality. And it has that same kind of sense of positivity and hope. I always find watching, you know, ladies like that make you think, hooray, there's hope for us all. You know, if you can be that passionate about fashion and dress so beautifully into your sort of 70s, 80s and 90s, then fantastic.
I think wisdom as well, though. Again, she's not being parodied because she comes up with these incredibly wise, albeit funny, sayings.
Exactly. She's a smart lady and she's learned a lot about life and she knows how to phrase it beautifully. So, yeah, you do learn a lot listening from her, actually. Yeah.
And do you get a sense? I mean, she's 93. Do you get a sense of privilege before she passes away that portrait has been able to be captured of this very one-of-a-kind people?
Absolutely. It does feel like a wonderful moment. I think it's important to have made that film. I didn't know a great deal about it before I saw it, but I now feel, as you say, that it was an important thing to do. Yeah.
Iris has been showing on the International Film Festival circuit and can now be found in arthouse cinemas around the world. Let's move on now to the latest Disney Pixar animation, Inside Out. Riley is an 11-year-old girl who tries to deal with her emotions as her parents move her from Minnesota to a new life in San Francisco. The film is largely set inside her brain, where five characters, Joy, Sadness, Anger, Fear, and Disgust live, and they work together to secure that Riley has a good day every day. But as the movie takes place, Joy and Sadness get lost in the depths of Riley's head, and the film follows the two characters as they try to get back to HQ, and Riley as she tries to overcome the confusing emotional battles in her mind. Now, a brilliant concept. How has it been executed?
Well, it's an ambitious one, isn't it? But it's very well done indeed. You know, Disney Pixar are tremendous at doing this kind of thing really well. It's an interesting idea, of course, a more introspective look. And, you know, so that's sort of growing up a little bit. You know, Toy Story was, gosh, nearly 20 years ago now. And this is more perhaps for the slightly older children and adults as well, because I saw it at Cannes Film Festival and everyone loved it and clapped at the end, you know, film critics. But yeah, it's well done. I think there's points when Joy and Sadness go off on this kind of road trip where it gets a little bit overly convoluted, personally. I seem to be slightly alone on this because everyone else is saying five stars, it's amazing. I don't think it's a masterpiece, but I think it's tremendous fun. And I think it's very, very funny.
Well, we're going to have a little listen now because we can't resist. Here, Riley is still a baby and we're being introduced to her emotions. This is Anger.
Riley, if you don't eat your dinner, you're not going to get any dessert.
Wait, did he just say we couldn't have dessert?
That's Anger. He cares very deeply about things being fair.
So that's how you want to play it, old man? No dessert? Oh, sure. We'll eat our dinner right after you eat this.
Right, right. Here comes an airplane.
Oh, airplane. We got an airplane, everybody.
And that was a clip from Inside Out. Now, interesting emotions at work. Funny that there's only one positive one, Joy, and the rest are rather negative.
That's right. I mean, why isn't love there, for example? It does seem like a simplistic view of psychology. But at the same time, obviously, it's aimed at children primarily. So you have to simplify things. And I actually read an article with child psychologists who said that although it does obviously simplify things, that perhaps it does touch on very interesting issues and helpful issues for young people and sort of say, well, actually, you don't have to be happy all the time. Maybe sadness is part of it, and one of the messages, you know, it's okay to be sad when things go wrong, and it's actually quite a sweet message, and it's one of those life-affirming, sort of family-affirming films. You know, I think Pixar are trying to overpopulate the planet because they kind of paint the idea of children and family as the most heartwarming thing at the end of this film. It's very sweet.
This is inventiveness with a capital I. In fact, all the letters have to be in capital. Can you help us visualize and talk us through the construction of the brain and the role it has on screen?
It's a control room, a very colourful one, this being Disney Pixar. But yes, it's a control room, and sitting at the desk are the emotions that we have spoken of. And they've all got sort of crazy appearances and colourful hair. Joy has this wonderful shock of blue hair and a nice big smile. And Joy is generally in control until Riley moves house. And then the others are jostling for space at this control desk. And in front of them, they have a screen showing them what's going on through, you know, Riley's point of view. view. It sounds a bit complex, but it actually does work. And of course, occasionally you do go out into the big wide world, which I kind of liked a lot more in some ways, because you're seeing what's actually happening in Riley's life and then you jump back into her head. But it's great fun when it also jumps into the mother and father's heads all too briefly. But that's a big laugh for the adults there.
And what about the memories and the hoovering up of the memories? How is that visualised?
They have like a suction pipe that kind of pulls them up, and they're big colourful marbles. I don't know how they come up with these things, but it works quite well. It's fun.
Tell me a little bit just about the team behind it, and what's their recipe for success, do you think?
Well, you know, it's a lot of the guys who are involved in Up, you know, Pete Doctor, and it's very family based, as I say, and it's kind of that heartwarming sense of life continuing and the troubles and trials that we all face. So it deals with a lot of those themes, and obviously at the same time a lot of very strong humour, some physical humour, character based humour, anything that anyone can relate to of a certain age.
And laughter and tears?
Laughter and tears, exactly. Tug on the heartstrings hard.
Okay, well, Inside Out is a must-see movie this summer, so make sure to catch it on the big screen at a cinema near you. And talking of the big screen, we're going to end with Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, which sees Tom Cruise back in his role as Ethan Hunt, this time trying to take down the Syndicate, a rogue institution committed to destroying the International Monetary Fund. This is the fifth film in the franchise. Is it tired yet?
It's not. Do you know what? It's almost revitalised. I was so impressed. You go in thinking, gosh, yes, another Mission Impossible film. It can't be as good as it used to be. But actually, I think it's one of the best. You know, as popcorn blockbusters go, this does it really, really well. You know, it just does the business. It's the action is strong. As we know, Tom Cruise gets involved in a lot of his own stunts. It's funny. It's got the sense to not take itself too seriously. It's obviously very glamorous and glitzy. And what I liked about this one as well, it has a very strong female lead in Rebecca Ferguson.
Interesting. Of course, Tom Cruise, both as producer but also as starring role, at 53, can he still be that Mission Impossible action hero?
He can, believe it or not. Yeah, whatever you think of him, you know, he's still a movie star and he's still got the moves. Yeah.
Well, we're going to hear a clip, and this is one of his stunts. Here, Ethan and his team try to break into a moving plane remotely, except, of course, for our protagonist who's clambering onto the wings.
Can you open the door? I'm by the plane. Benji, can you open the door?
Maybe.
Open the door when I tell you!
How'd you get in the plane?
Not in the plane. I'm on the plane. Open the door.
Action from Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. I was reading one review that said, better than Bond, better than Bourne. What do you think?
Better than some Bournes, I would qualify. Yeah, I mean, you know, Spectre's actually got a fairly large actor follow now after this. They actually brought this movie forward to avoid clashing with bigger movies at the end of the year. It's meant to come out in December. But I think it works as a summer blockbuster. And yeah, I think it actually has a lot of the qualities of the Bonds that I grew up watching in the 70s and the 80s. You know, it's quite old school, slick, with a wink and a nod. You know, that kind of humour is very Bond-like.
4 years since the last Mission Impossible film, and a very, very, very hefty budget. What was the budget and how do we see that on screen?
A lot. I actually couldn't quote you the budget. But you do you know what? It feels like a very expensive movie and money well spent. And it's going to make it back by the bucket load, I think. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of visual effects, but there's a lot of live action stunts in camera. Clearly, you know, there's a hefty paycheck for the cast involved. But also you get the sense that this has been quite well written. You know, it's a kind of script that people have gone back to and sort of, hang on a minute, that joke doesn't work. Let's try it again. You know, so often I see these lazy so-called you know, blockbusters and popcorn movies that are just sort of stringing out the conversation between one action scene and another. But the dialogue is quite smart and snappy in this.
And I was interested, you touched on it a bit earlier, Rebecca Ferguson as almost leading Tom Cruise in this film.
Well, he's pretty much met his match, you know, as they say in the film. And yeah, and she's terrific as a, as an agent who's, you know, she can handle the action just as well as the humour and the love scenes and such like. But I thought she's great. I mean, you know, often Tom Cruise is quite well known for starring against women who are less well known, but this is a great chance for her to show what she can do. And again, she had sort of the air of a sort of 70s Bond girl, but with incredible sort of martial arts moves and a very sort of intelligent quality as well. So I think I was quite surprised how non-token she was.
And really nice not to have a sort of two-dimensional character and a female lead in an action movie. Well, Mission Impossible has just started rolling out in cinemas worldwide. And again, it is a must for the big screen. And that brings us to the end of today's show. My thanks to Anna Smith for joining me in studio today. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Gillian DeBias. My producer was Holly Fisher and my researcher was Fernando Augusto Pacheco. We'll be back same time next Monday for our art review with Francesca Gavin. But for now, goodbye from me and thanks for listening.